Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're peeling back the layers on something really fundamental, professional ethics, specifically for folks providing assurance services, you know, like auditors.
Right.
And this isn't just some dry rule book. It's really about the foundation of trust in business.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating, I think, is how these ethical frameworks, well, they're designed to ensure professionals act in the public interest, not just for their clients.
Public interest, yeah.
So our mission today really is to unpack how they build that confidence and navigate some pretty complex situations.
Okay, let's get into it then.
Yeah.
To build that trust, professionals use this conceptual framework, right? And it's built on five fundamental principles.
Mm-hmm. The core values.
Exactly, like their ethical DNA.
First up is integrity.
Straightforwardness, honesty. Pretty basic, but crucial.
Then objectivity. So not letting bias or conflicts mess with your judgment.
Yeah, no skewed perspectives.
Third, professional competence and due care. Basically, knowing your stuff and being careful. Keeping schools sharp, acting diligently, you have to.
Fourth, confidentiality. Gotta respect that sensitive info.
Absolutely critical. You see a lot of private data.
And finally, professional behavior. You know, keeping the profession's reputation solid. These are the standards everyone expects.
And that brings up a really key point here. Independence. Why is that so vital?
Good question.
Well, it's defined as freedom from situations and relationships where objectivity would be perceived to be impaired. And that perception is judged by a reasonable and informed third party.
So it's not just about actually being biased, but how it looks.
Precisely. And this third party doesn't even need to be an accountant. Mm-hmm. Just someone who understands enough to judge fairly. Think about it. The whole financial system relies on audited statements being reliable.
Right.
If independence or even the perception of it is shaky, that trust just evaporates. We've seen scandals where that's cost billions.
Okay, so these principles are the bedrock. But things aren't always simple. What happens when, you know, things get tricky? When these principles face threats?
Yeah, exactly. Threats are situations that could compromise that professional judgment we talked about. They're like potential pitfalls.
Yeah.
Ethical slippery slopes.
Slippery slopes, good way to put it.
And these threats, they generally fall into categories. We talk about self-interest, self-review, familiarity, advocacy, and intimidation.
Right.
And the goal always is to spot these threats.
Yeah.
And then either get rid of them completely or reduce them down to an acceptable level. You do that using safeguards.
Safeguards? Okay.
It's like an ethical risk management process in a way.
Okay, this is where it gets interesting. Let's use some examples. Self-interest. What would that look like?
Well, imagine an auditor owns shares in the client they're auditing.
Ah, okay. Clear conflict.
Definitely. There's a direct financial incentive to maybe overlook problems, right? To protect their own investment. Or another big one is fee dependency.
Fee dependency.
Yeah, if, say, one client makes up a really large chunk of the firm's total fees, maybe over 15% for a listed client for 2 years running, that's often seen as a red flag.
Why is that?
Because the firm might be hesitant to issue a tough audit report for fear of losing that huge chunk of income. The safeguard. Well, sell the shares. For fee dependency, maybe try to grow the client base to dilute that reliance or, importantly, have an independent partner review the audit work.
Makes sense. What about familiarity?
Okay, picture this. The audit manager's brother is the financial controller at the client company.
Oh, right. Too close for comfort.
Exactly. The risk is you might become too trusting, maybe less skeptical than you should be. You might cut corners subconsciously because, well, it's family.
So the safeguard there is
pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Take that manager off the audit team for that client. Remove the familiarity threat.
Got it. And self-review. That sounds like marking your own homework.
It kind of is. Mm-hmm. If a firm, say, prepares the client's accounting records and then audits those same records, yeah, there's a big risk you won't spot your own mistakes. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you'd be reluctant to admit them. For listed clients, the rules are strict. You generally cannot provide bookkeeping or accounting services that are material to the financials if you're also the auditor.
At all.
For material items, yes. For non-listed clients, maybe some routine stuff is okay, but it absolutely must be done by different people, a separate team, not the audit team members. Clear separation.
We also mentioned advocacy and intimidation. Quickly, what are those?
Sure. Advocacy is where you might be promoting your client's shares or maybe acting like their lawyer in a dispute. You're pushing their position so hard, you compromise your own objectivity.
And intimidation sounds nasty.
It can be.
Yeah.
That's when a client tries to pressure you. Maybe they threaten to fire the firm if you don't agree with their dodgy accounting treatment.
Wow.
Yeah, both directly challenge your professional judgment. Firms need really strong internal policies, maybe ethics partners, and sometimes just the courage to push back or even resign.
And let's not forget confidentiality in all this.
Oh, absolutely fundamental. Professionals handle incredibly sensitive client information. They have a strict duty to keep it confidential.
Unless.
Unless they have specific permission to disclose it, or there's a legal requirement like a court order, or sometimes a professional duty like reporting suspected fraud or money laundering. That's often in the public interest.
Okay, so we have principles, threats, safeguards. How do firms actually start things off right with a new client, make sure everyone's clear on the rules of the game?
Great question. They use something called an engagement letter. And it's not just paperwork, it's a really critical document.
What does it do?
Well, it formally sets out the terms and conditions of the job. It confirms the firm accepts the engagement. And crucially, it aims to minimize any misunderstandings later on.
So it spells everything out?
Pretty much. It clearly defines the objective of the audit, the scope, what will and won't be audited. And very importantly, it explicitly states the responsibilities of the auditor and the responsibilities of the client's management.
Ah, so management has responsibilities too, like preparing the financial statements.
Exactly. It puts it all down in black and white. It's that foundational agreement for an ethical professional relationship right from the get-go.
So bringing this all together, what does this mean for you listening, even if you aren't an auditor?
Well, I think understanding these ethical principles and the safeguards that are supposed to be in place gives you a much deeper appreciation for the integrity or lack thereof, sometimes behind the financial numbers and the professional advice you might receive.
Yeah, it's about knowing the framework that's supposed to ensure trustworthiness. Because when these safeguards fail, it's not just one company or firm that suffers.
Right. Market confidence can plummet. Ordinary investors can lose their savings. The ripple effects can be huge.
So I guess the big takeaway is that professional ethics isn't just a checklist.
No, not at all. It's dynamic. It's a continuous process based on principles. It involves constantly identifying threats, thinking critically, applying safeguards, and using a lot of professional judgment. It really invites all of us, professionals and the public, to constantly think about not just the what that's being done, but the much more important why. Why does this matter for trust, for public confidence? That's the real heart of it.